Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here to share the Dharma together on this beautiful fall morning. Today is also the second day of our weekend Zen seminar. So a special welcome to our participants and also guests. As has been said many times, a teisho like this is not a sermon or a talk in the usual sense. It's not an attempt to convey information or ideas. It is, in one sense, an attempt by the teacher to express his or her understanding as well as it can be done in words. It is also an expression of aspiration and an offering to the Buddha. So, let go of the discursive intellect. Don't try to judge or evaluate or understand in the usual way. Just listen with an open mind and an open heart. If you need to shift your posture during the teisho, that's fine. But however you sit, keep the back straight and the head up. What is enlightenment? What is it that we seek here in our sitting, in our practice? Is it a one-off event, a single earth-shattering experience? Is it some kind of perpetual high where we float around in a pink cloud singing kumbaya? And what brings a person to awakening? A stone strikes a bamboo stalk, and the monk Xianyang came to awakening. A temple bell rings, and Wu Men comes to awakening. A locomotive whistle blows, and a man walking home from Sesshin comes to awakening. A student is polishing the furniture and comes to awakening. It's not always the words or shouts of a Zen master that bring about the experience that we call Kensho or Satori. The sound of a stone, the color of roses, a chance remark heard on the street might do it just as well. The awakening itself may be deep or shallow. It may be accompanied by a tremendous emotional feeling of release and liberation. Or it may be just a slow, quiet realization of, oh, that's the way it is. And who is it that comes to awakening? Can one have more than one such experience? What condition must precede it? What makes one a candidate? What did Wu Men, Xianyang, and the others have in common? Today we'll take a look at a case from a book entitled True Dharma Eye, The 300 Cases of Master Dogen. This is not one of the koan collections that we work with in our curriculum here at the center, but it's fun to nose around in other collections and see what we come up with. So case number 21. Pan Chans, cut a fine piece. Once, Master Bao Ji of Pan Chan went to the marketplace and overheard a customer speaking to the butcher. The customer said to the butcher, "Cut a fine piece for me." The butcher threw down his knife, folded his hands, and said, "Sir, is there any piece that is not fine?" Upon hearing these words, Pan Chan had an awakening. Master Bao Ji of Pan Chan lived during the 8th century of the Common Era, his dates being 720 to 814. He was a disciple of Matsu. So he was a Dharma brother of Baizhang, Nanchuan, Da Mei, and Layman Pang Yun, among others. Most koans are brief accounts of the sayings and doings of the Zen masters of the Tang era in ancient China. When you first hear a koan, it may seem obscure or even nonsensical. The job of the student is to see the koan clearly and then demonstrate the koan in doksan, beyond words and phrases. You can't explain it. You have to be it. Usually it's the Zen master who speaks and the student, be it monastic or lay person, who comes to awakening, or not. Pan Chan is a Zen master. He has presumably spent a great part of his life doing Zazen, maybe working on koans. Maybe he has taught students, has his own monastery or temple. But here he is, mooching around the marketplace. What's he up to? Shopping? Drumming up business for the temple? Seeking enlightenment? If Pan Chan has a purpose, he's wasting his time. And what about the rest of us? When we go into the marketplace, to the supermarket, to the mall, Costco or Walmart or King Supers, or to our job, or out into the world. I need some milk and bread. I'm looking for a pair of shoes. I've got to turn in this paper, mail this check, and on and on. We become obsessed and occupied with our purposes and our goals, what we want to buy, to sell, to do, to see, to accomplish, that we completely blind ourselves to the here and now reality. How many of us would hear, really hear, that conversation between the customer and the butcher? Or would it just be background noise to our internally generated noise, which is, of course, so much more important? Purposes, goals, objectives are about the self going out and confirming the 10,000 things. That is what Dogen calls delusion. When the 10,000 things come forth and confirm the self, that is what Dogen calls enlightenment. Many years ago, Philip Kaplow Roshi visited Denver. That's back when we were still in the old house on Columbine Street. He had agreed to conduct a wedding. And almost the whole Sangha was there, busily setting up, cleaning, arranging the zendo, the altars, the flowers, and naturally doing a lot of cooking. At one point, Roshi wandered into the kitchen, and he just stood there a while. Very slight smile on his face, amidst all the hustle and bustle, completely present, completely enjoying the moment. How can the 10,000 things, all phenomena, come forth and confirm the self? That can happen only when there is no self. No barriers, no other. The 10th Oxherding picture titled Entering the Marketplace with Bliss-Bestowing Hands shows a smiling, ragged, dusty, bare-chested monk wandering through the market of the world. He helps all he meets. But he can help only if he is completely open. No separation, no barrier between self and other. Enlightenment is not a one-way street. There is no your enlightenment or my enlightenment. There's only enlightenment. We say that we have to die to the self in order to see clearly. That separated ego self is the barrier, the stumbling block. When we can see clearly beyond that ego self, we're not trying to destroy it. That's when the world opens up, becomes open and boundless. Xiangyan, Wu Min, the man at the railroad track, the student, and Pan Chan were all boundlessly open. Only in boundless openness can one have even a possibility of seeing clearly and realizing that clarity. This boundless openness is receptive and aware of everything, all sights, all sounds, even a remark by the local butcher. The customer says, "Cut a fine piece for me." Cut a fine piece for me. I want only the best. The fine apple or peach or head of lettuce. Don't want it too soft or too green. But like Goldilocks, we want the one that is just right. Just right for what? Does it make a difference if we're shopping for ourselves or for someone else? Does it make a difference if we are feeding the dog or the parrot rather than a human being? We pick and we choose, we pick and we choose, pick and choose. We're always making choices. And we have to. So, make the choice and then accept whatever comes out of it and keep moving along. No going back to what ifs. The ancient master Sung San said, to choose without preference, that is without attachment, is to be clear. And the butcher answers, sir, is there any piece that is not fine? This is really interesting. Why a butcher? When was the last time anyone mentioned a butcher in Buddhist scripture? One of the criteria of right livelihood set forth by the Buddha is not to trade in the flesh of dead animals. So why does this case say this was a butcher? Is the butcher an irredeemable sinner? Maybe that's the point here. Do we hear the word butcher and immediately discount what he says because of who we have decided he is, who we consider him to be, because he is unworthy? Do we only pay attention to those whom we venerate because they have certain labels or maybe a different color robe? Or Roxa. Are the words more acceptable if the Dalai Lama said them? Did I take up this koan because it was in the name of a master? If Pan Chan had interrupted the conversation and himself said, is there any peace that is not fine, would that make it more right? How concerned should we be about the source? Years ago, on one of the magazine programs on television, might have been 60 Minutes, I'm not sure, I saw an interview with a man on death row. He had instructed his lawyers to stop the appeals and allow the execution to proceed. The interviewer asked him, "Aren't you afraid of dying?" The prisoner replied, "My body's afraid." That really struck me. And that phrase, my body is afraid, I have found it to be extraordinarily helpful as I get older and looking at death and dying, my body is afraid or something is afraid. There will always be a part of us that is afraid of death. And it's our practice to see beyond that, as did this prisoner. Should I have completely discounted his words because he was a convicted murderer? And what of those notorious tea ladies, anonymous for the most part, who lie in wait along the roadside to entrap the unwary with innocent-seeming questions? Which way to Mount Wutai? Go straight on. If you take that at face value, you will stumble. All beings are by nature Buddha. All beings have something to teach us, if we can see it. Channel 9 television used to have a slogan. It's all right here. Did anybody get it? If you look up at various intersections, you will see a sign that reads, one way. Yeah, sometimes it can be humorous. I'm not much of a fan of radio evangelists, but I heard a Baptist preacher once declare, saving the soul is a continuous process. And I thought, wow, this guy's onto something. And what is the true source of words anyway? To whom do they belong? Butcher speaks, panchan hears, customer hears, butcher hears. Once the words have left the mouth, whose words are they? These words that I speak, are they my words or your words? If you hear them, are they not your words also? Was the butcher a student of Zen, a fellow traveler on the path? Is he like one of those formidable tea ladies? Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was just bragging about his stock and chastising the customer for doubting. Was the engineer who blew the train whistle an enlightened teacher? Was there a Zen master at Channel 9? Does any of that really matter? The butcher said, is there any peace that is not fine? And Panchan had awakening. I wonder if he thought to himself, wow, that guy is onto something. Because he was, you know. The butcher really was onto something. In his commentary on case 87 of the Blue Cliff Record, Yen Wu writes, one day Manjushri ordered Sudana to pick medicinal herbs. He said, if there is something that is not medicine, bring it to me. Sudana searched all over, but there was nothing that was not medicine. So he went back and told Manjushri, there is nothing that is not medicine. Manjushri said, gather something that is medicine. Sudana then picked up a blade of grass and handed it to Manjushri. Manjushri held it up, showed it to the assembly, and saying, this medicine can kill people, it can also bring people to life. Is there anything that is not medicine? In this moment, is there any peace that is not fine? Is there any flower, child, tree, or atom that is not fine? Is there anyone here who is not just fine as you are in this moment, this very moment, as you sit right here, right now? You are the sun, the moon, the stars, and the great wide earth. You are all in all. What more can you be? A child, A dog, a tree, a cloud, a stone, and a butcher all preach the Dharma whether they know it or not. What really matters is Panchan. What really matters is each of us. When we hear words, sounds, see things, are we open? Are we boundlessly open to the teaching of this moment? Just as the first noble truth says, anguish is everywhere, so is enlightenment everywhere. It's all about what you choose to see. It is said that if a person of understanding speaks a false doctrine, it becomes true. If a person of no understanding speaks a true doctrine, it becomes false. But one could turn that around. One could say that if a person of understanding hears a false doctrine, it becomes true. If a person of no understanding hears a true doctrine, it becomes false. In our koan work, the practice is to read the words, sit with the words, become one with the words, until at last they become true for us in the deepest sense, until the koan becomes the truth itself, beyond words, beyond thought. We do that over and over with all the 500 plus koans in our curriculum here. And every time, we have to die a little bit to the self, so that we may come to life. The medicine kills, and it brings to life. Panchan had an awakening. If Panchan had an awakening in the marketplace, what was he before? Ignorant? Only in the rarest cases does what we call deep enlightenment happen all at once. Usually one has an initial glimpse, deep or shallow, but with continued practice, whether it be with koans or with one's life, little awakenings happen every now and then in the most unexpected ways. Is there any peace that is not fine? Had Panchan never heard such a thing? As a master and a teacher, had he never said anything like it himself? Is there any peace that is not fine? And yet he heard the butcher as though he had never heard it. What does it take to do that? Certainly one cannot cling to any notion of being a Zen master. Panchan has died to the self, and therefore everything brings him to life. Everything brings him to the life of this moment. Panchan is boundlessly open, and therefore everything and everyone is his teacher, and he awakens moment by moment. He is awakening itself. If we can live completely open in mind and heart, if we are not encumbered with past and future, if we are free of judgment, then every moment is an awakening. No matter who we meet, or where, or the circumstances, there is always something to be learned, to be seen, to be open to wisdom, no matter the source, be it a stone, a train whistle, or a butcher, all are Buddha. Sun shines. Ah, the moon rises. Ah, the aspen are beginning to turn. Ah, a cab driver curses at a bicyclist. Ha ha, yeah. The last lines of Keizan's verse to a case in the Denko Ryukyu read, "The empty white is fully accomplished after discriminating consciousness minutely in a broad and generous state of mind." We discriminate minutely. We see ourselves, Pan Chan, the butcher, clearly, warts and all. But if we see in that broad and generous state of mind that accepts everything, even as the ocean accepts a river flowing into it, then we see clearly. Then indeed, there is no peace that is not just fine. Together with all beings, we realize the way.